It said Matthew Kressel unavailable. That's where it says, and I just tried to add him.
What the hell?
Unless he's changed his Skype ID.
Maybe he's suddenly got shy.
Well, you're on it, Deb, so it's
probably
why.
Isn't the first time that he said, oh, I'm definitely going to join you, and then doesn't.
I don't think he ever said definitely.
Let me find...
Well, he said something along the lines of if he didn't have one of his headaches.
Yeah. Well, he should be all right. Ben's not on the show this week.
I'm texting him.
Are you now?
And guess what? I'm texting him exactly the same words I texted him on June 28th, and exactly the same words I texted him on July 21st of last year.
Funny, I'm not really surprised that.
Maybe those words don't work, Kirby.
Yeah, that's a very good assessment, Robert.
Have you tried different words?
He's
texting the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, Matthew started a few words like, please don't stalk me.
APP Services, Lavazzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 472. I'm Adam, and for the last time,
excellent.
And here's Ibisit.
The fact of her death will drive her insane.
Robert Haynes.
Face that like I would.
Robert Haynes.
As my lady knows, before I entered your service, I was found guilty of a large number of offences.
You entered her what?
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Do you think he'll simply walk in here and hand it over?
Debbie Melrose. Yes, Debbie Melrose, everyone.
Woo!
That's my quote.
I didn't hear it. Well, did you say, oh, the sneeze?
Yeah, several times.
Oh, dear. And Mary Lang.
We surely do, honey. We surely do.
Very good. Very
good. Mary has to do that one.
Last time we did this story.
I was so close to doing a quote from her, and I thought, if Mary goes after me, I'm not doing a quote from her.
You know what, my first quote. My first quote was excellent. I had to go to a backup quote.
Yeah, I'm not very imaginative when it comes to quotes these days. So I was too busy doing other things. But I thought it was a bit of a nod to Mr. Banks' final appearance in Doctor Who. Right then. Lillian Robbins says hi.
He wields a very evil-looking coat hanger in the rehearsals.
Does he?
Yes.
Yes, he does.
Lillian Robbins says hi. Robert Vence Jr. says hello, everyone. Welcome back, Robert Haynes and Debbie Melrose. Terry Marr says hi, everybody. And Lillian Robbins says, Debbie!
Thank you.
Is this your tomb?
Is it what?
No, that was my other quote.
Tomb. Oh, sorry. Okay, well, I'm not doing two quotes. Yeah, so this week we're...
Why not? Because I sometimes have posted all of my quotes.
We know. Yeah.
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hang on, I better get my priority jingle folder open, hadn't I?
Matthew Kressel isn't even on Facebook.
It says he was
on 2 hours ago.
He's using Kirby's old time zone excuse, is he? Excellent, that's what I like to see. You should sue him for that one, Kirby. It's a breach of copyright.
It's allowed by anyone. Now, how come Reese hasn't joined us? Because he said that maybe we didn't give him enough time this time.
Maybe he's good. He's,
I don't think he watched it.
Used that excuse in chapter one of his first book, didn't he?
Probably.
Priority jingles here.
I just noticed on the, you know how you've got scenes from the episode playing behind the DVD menu?
Yeah.
One of them is of the cyber ship landing, where you can definitely see the helicopter flash.
Splendid. The first time we've actually, instead of what's really happened, actually got into the episode at all. We're actually reviewing part of the backdrop of the DVD.
I know, it's amazing. It's like we've leapt forward.
Reviewing background video.
We're trying to save time here.
Yeah.
We didn't get that privilege.
Yes, we don't.
Right, it begins with the
boot up screen.
Terrible
which
title
sequence.
Which version
are we reviewing?
Pardon?
The story.
Which virgin?
Right, anyway. So we begin with the first scene where they've got the Nazis in the house. I presume that was supposed to be like that film with Laurence Olivier in it. The Marathon Man? I don't know. What was it called? Where
Boys
Laurence Olivier is a Nazi war criminal.
Boys from Brazil.
That one. That sort of, is that what it's supposed to be like? Because it certainly reminded me of it, and it's a similar setup.
They weren't supposed to be Nazis. They were written to be just paramilitary because with BBC going international, that meant they were shipping the story to Germany, and they didn't want to offend the Germans, so they took all the Nazi stuff out of the script and only did paramilitary as the word. But then the director and put the Nazi symbols everywhere and, made it more obvious that it was Nazi again. So.
Okay. So, either way, first scene, hardly any dialogue said at the moment, but we've got a computer screen with some very high-tech graphics.
Did you notice that they tried to make it look like South America by adding hills in the background?
The hills are added in the background.
Yes, I thought it was quite a good effort, and that really nice tame British macaw up on the...
that he almost shot.
Anyway.
But actually, I mean, back when that was on TV, I mean, I didn't notice, but now watching on my big screen TV, my HD TV, I'm like, ooh, interesting.
Yeah. They've obviously come to the Isle of Wight, gone down to Ventnor. And
it says on the computer screen, landing location, high-tech graphics, Windsor, grid reference, blah, 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 November 23rd, 1988. Not at all being banged over the head with... dates, Doctor Who related dates or anything, are we?
Well, there's Master. Master.
Oh, here we go. Yes.
Well, there's this major issue that what is the weather usually like in November in Windsor?
Well, it can be sunny. I mean, it was sunny here today in October, a bit windy at the beginning and rainy. Well, a bit of thunder overnight.
Well, short sleeves and outdoor jazz concerts, really?
You can get Indian summers if you're lucky.
It did look rather warm in the park.
It's highly unlikely, but well spotted, Kirby. Yeah. Can I continue? As we've got 1 minute and 11 seconds into a three-part story, and it's already 7:10, and the clocks have gone back.
This is three parts. It seemed interminable.
9 past, actually.
I haven't even got into the dialogue in the story yet, and I'm still waiting. Right then, so so we're being banged over the head about the date and everything with these high-tech graphics, and then we meet, because the computer's even ground well. Oh, we're back again. And of course, it was a mention of the macaw. Was it a macaw? Some sort of parrot in the tree.
I think it's a macaw.
Our friendly Nazi war criminal. What? A parrot. Yeah, no, it's a parrot. Is just because it's going, it's just a very bad, it didn't even sound like a parrot. Sounded more like a crow, actually. It's just about to get shot by a bloke with a bow and arrow, and they have to do this because it's a bow and arrow, and there's links to bows and arrows, blah, 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 blah. But thankfully for the parrot, it gets saved by the chap with the slit back hair. And then we cut back to the beautiful...
His personal assistant.
...scenery of Windsor, England, a few hundred years previous. And Lady Painthought's not particularly accurate with her bow. She's trying to shoot something off Richard's head. I don't know, but
she's trying to shoot a pigeon. Wasn't
it was
she?
A pigeon.
Yeah, sorry, pigeon. I mean,
just a pigeon
on the ground, and she misses it.
I know.
What if she had hit it?
It's an easy target.
Pigeons can fly.
Wasn't even moving very fast.
Well, maybe she's in the
sort
of... And
she goes indoors.
Maybe she's going to be a Dalek one day, because they're not pretty good shots until David Tennant runs past.
I am the Cybermen in this story.
Alan T. Butcher says, fake Windsor is much better than Arundel, however you may pronounce it.
Yes, most of the scenes, obviously, are not Windsor Castle, but the one long shot...
Really?
Yes, really.
There was an American behind-the-scenes thing, wasn't there?
Yes. Yeah. Which, unfortunately, has disappeared from YouTube, and I didn't download it 7 years ago. So I can only watch a couple. There's a couple of small sections still on YouTube.
Splendid. So anyway, the scenery
including a fairly long section with David Banks, where you see him in rehearsal with his cone hanger.
Excellent.
Really works well on that. Audio presentation. Yeah, so the scenery for the old times, we'll call it, it's very, very good, very well lit and everything. The gold on the arrow tip doesn't look very gold, but hey, it doesn't really matter.
Why has she got
TV.
Gold on the arrow tips anyway?
Golden poison on the arrow tip.
Why? Why
so
gold?
Gold is a better surface to coat
the poison
because it's inert. The particular qualities inherent to gold, it kind of stays in contact longer, and it's, you know,
somehow
science fiction fantasy.
Thank you, Ian. Further. You got there in the end,
somehow,
didn't you?
With J&T, really liked his poisoning the Cybermen with gold.
Yeah, they only need to look at it in this episode, and they were going,
the floor scatters it at one point and just runs.
Anyway, so the evil Nazi war criminal bloke has his own bow, which is part of the Nemesis thing. And then wasn't a learned man the doctor in an earlier story once upon a time?
He was going to be the first doctor,
okay. Yeah.
He was among the people considered to be the first.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so he's the sort of like the soothsayer bloke who works out everything, a bit like Leonardo da Vinci. I nearly said DiCaprio for some reason. Leonardo da Vinci, who was quite clever in that front. And then we have Courtney Pine playing his saxophone. Nowadays, he's got a rather weird sort of... dreadlocky sort of hairdo. In those days he wore a sort of like a artist's cap, but I didn't understand that. Was JNT a particular fan of Courtney Pine, or was it just
Andrew Cartmell
but I did notice when he's playing his saxophone with his little band, as the camera panned around on its little track, the people watching and listening, the two chaps sat at the table with their headphones on. I thought to myself, why are they sat with headphones on? Don't they like the music? They seem to be enjoying it, you know. And of course, later on, it turns out they're assassins. It wasn't that much later.
Not
only that, Master. No, Master's not in this one.
They are being converted into Cybermen.
That too, yeah. With wearing headphones. Robert Edgstuner says no birds were harmed in the making of this episode.
Yeah, that's not really clear. Why did they shoot the doctor?
No, it is not clear.
Yeah.
It's not clear.
I don't even know the doctor.
But it's like most of this story. It's not clear.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, they do try and kill the doctor. The doctor, obviously, they're watching and enjoying Courtney Pine. He's got a fancy watch with an old-fashioned digital display on it. He claims he's forgotten a few details here and there. Then what's her name? Oh yeah, Ace gets her cassette signed by Courtney Pine before they end up getting attacked by these mysterious men. And the funny thing is, as they walk across the bridge, of course, the bullet sort of things ring out, and they sort of fall in as if they've been shot, sort of in a sort of synchronicity. I would have thought
bad stunt shot.
Yeah. I think the best way of doing that is the doctor could have pushed Ace in to save her rather than they both fall in as if they've been shot. Now, here we go. Kirby's got an explanation.
That is actually Sophie... going into the water, but it's not Sylvester. Guy.
Sylvester was sick.
Cold.
Sylvester was sick, was he?
He had a cold, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. That's why you don't see a lot of his face when they're going down his hat's all floppy.
And when she gets hoiked out of the water, you can't see his face, there's just a hand.
Right. Yeah. And then they cut to him, and he's got a mouthful of water, and he spits it out after he pulls his head up. And it's like,
so he's actually covered in snot, a lot more water then, is that what you're saying?
And Sophie said that they would never allow something like this today with health and safety.
Oh, no.
Probably not, no. Anyway.
Well, I'll talk about them later.
After Lady Painfort gets the information she wants, he obviously going to sort of bump the learned man off and nick some of his blood as well. The doctor... has made a rather pointless ghetto blaster for Ace, which is actually not really for Ace, it's for him.
Humongous.
Pardon?
There is a reason for that. having been made.
Yeah, I know, because they wanted to use it as some sort of fan dabby dozy, all singing, dancing gadget.
No, it's the Ghetto Blaster exists because they had no interior TARDIS scenes and they couldn't fit any in. So it substitutes for a scene that would normally be in the control room.
Oh, okay, Kirby. That's acceptable. I suppose you deserve one of these. Ding. So notice it stopped it halfway through. So that, I'll do that again.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
No.
No.
I don't even get one, Kirby.
No, you don't get one, Robert. No, that's right. Anyway, but I do quite like the graphic they created. The graphic they created, the ball-shaped thing that where they could do the scanner, which obviously is very similar to the little thing that Bonnie Langford screamed in at the beginning of the last series. But yeah, it's quite good. And then for some weird, I don't know how they did it, but using some sort of weird magic and stuff, Lady Painthought and Richard cleverly.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird, but it's beautifully done when they transport themselves
Mind
into...
Mind you, remember Ace was supposed to be taken by a time
indeed,
storm.
Indeed she was, but I'm not bothered about it. It's a science fiction
fantasy. Do I get a ding for that?
It's a science fiction, a science fiction fantasy TV show, but I do like the way that they...
Lady Painthought was a witch. And she was making up a concoction to do this, but they needed blood from someone. That's why they both look at the mathematician at the table.
And I don't mind magic. That. I'm not one
for magic in Doctor Who.
Magic is in the other room. It's
My
not really
problem
magic.
With this is the people who are already in the restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give them a slight glance when they appear, and then go back to their meal like nothing happened. Yes.
I suppose you would sort of think, oh my god, this
just appeared out of nowhere.
This is a bit scary and run out.
Back to lunch.
And maybe I thought it was a ghost or something. I don't know.
Master.
Back.
Yes.
Master, we've already discussed. Okay, you're saying it's possibly Indian summer and late November.
All right.
In winter.
Oh, god,
what about all
again?
The greenery?
Adam, how far have we actually got into this first episode?
9 minutes, 52 seconds.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And we're still on the weather.
Yeah.
Does it matter? No. Right. Okay, so yeah, I love the way they arrive in this cupboard. I know, like I say, the reaction of the people in there is a bit funny, but I did like the way it was done. And I quite like
The director said that he wasn't quite satisfied with the special effect. It looks better in the close-up than in the... slightly further away. That's his own opinion.
Terry Miles says, tea time again. The Doctor and Ace arrive in TARDIS inside Windsor Castle in some sort of vault where they've got sorts. Makes me forget. Remember something. Somebody actually asked, one of the fan of the show, suggested I wear my Madness Feds.
Yes, you should.
Just reminded me. See in the scene where...
You need to go grab a mop, too.
But I'm not going to do that because Deb will get a shock, think I'm actually doing some housework. yeah, so the Doctor wears a Fez briefly and then Ace wears one. And then the Doctor nearly knocks some stuff over and Ace does. Doctor catches it. They sort of basically look around this... room for clues.
It was admitted in the making of stuff for Pandorica Opens that they were directly referencing this.
Yeah, okay. I've got my hat on round. Oh, sorry, my fez is around the wrong. There we go. Got it round the right way now. So this scene is a bit pointless really because we already know the Doctor knows everything that's going on anyway. It's all sort of planned by him from the first moment, and they go back in time, don't they, to Lady Painthought's little shack.
Yes.
As well. I'm getting confused.
Master?
Yes?
Whenever you visited the O2 several times, right?
Yes. Oh, don't, yeah, this is where the O2.
You spot any remnants of what it looked like back when this was filmed, which it's that... all those buildings and stuff were on the site, which is now where the O2 is.
Right. You've just spent 30 seconds asking a question you fully know the answer to. It's obviously a no.
Yes, but there's tons, Kirby. Can we move on?
The funny thing is, in reference to that, the funny thing is that area, you know, say that they... decided to move it forward in time to the way it looks now. It does look, you know, for my sort of imaginations from the late 80s of what future Britain or London would look like in 2020, it would be exceptionally futuristic to imagine that there's, you know, the O2 dome there, or the Millennium Dome, or whatever you want to call it, and just next door is there's this sort of like flyover, like a car thing that goes up in the air and flies over via cable, you know, almost like one of those ski lift things.
Oh yes.
And all that is very futuristic, and how artists may have imagined what the future may look like. So that part of it is actually quite interesting. But what you said, Kirby, is a load of nonsense. There's no greenery or anything. It's all built up, futuristic looking, even now futuristic looking.
I know.
Land. So why waste? How long was that for? How long did we waste then, Debbie, on the show?
What is its official name? Is it officially the Millennium Dome, or is it officially
the O2? No, its birth name. Its official name is the O2 Arena.
Okay.
Until somebody else sponsors it. But I've got a funny feeling the O2
Arena. Doesn't the Doctor fly over that in the 11th hour?
Probably, I don't know.
Yeah, right at the beginning, he's hanging out outside the door of the TARDIS.
Then why did you ask the question?
You know, he's just he's trying to be a clever clog.
Adam Kirby.
God. Robert Bench Jr. says, I did like the time-travelling blood sacrifice part. So did I. And thumbs
I
up from Robert Bench Jr.
I asked him because I asked him 7 years ago. I'm going to repeat a lot of things I asked.
Right. As far as the magic in Doctor Who is concerned, the good thing about Doctor Who being a science fiction fantasy TV show is that magic can be explained away in a science fiction fantasy sort of way. So I don't have a problem with that. It's not Harry Potter magic. It's science fiction magic, and I don't care. Right then. How do we know that potions can't do these things? We don't, do it, because it's fantasy.
You don't know what else was in that cup.
Exactly.
The last ingredient was blood, which they might have needed for iron, and God knows what else she had concocted in there.
Indeed. Thank you, Ian.
I mean, the master brought himself back with a potion.
Ian.
That's right. I hated that, too.
Ian.
Yes. Thank you.
How come he gets one?
Because he's right. Anyway, so meanwhile,
he likes Ian and Kirby better than he likes us. Around.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so something happens with the policeman.
Still
no
response from Matthew.
All right, the Doctor and Ace arrive at Windsor Castle. I forgot, because I got it wrong last time. They're actually in Lady Painforth's shack. They've arrived at Windsor Castle, and there's a little touring group going on with a few sort of familiar backs. Because obviously, if we saw their front
group. We've been told to make sure we say who some of those people are.
Do we have to?
Peter Muffet.
I know one of them's Nicholas Courtney. He's quite obvious.
The writer... Kevin Clark.
Yeah, apparently you can see a lot more of them if we had the extended edition that Matthew so likes.
Splendid. Right then. So anyway, so the Doctor and Ace do a bit of a slightly carry-on film-esque tour of the insidey, outy bit of Windsor Castle, when, of course, a woman who looks nothing like the Queen, just because she's
like
got... it's more like Margaret Thatcher with a few corgis, wanders in, and she... And there's a bit of a silly scene there. And then Lady Painfort and Richard are on a mission to find the nemesis, as are the Nazi people, as are, eventually, as I fast forward through, my God, I'm only about 10 minutes in, I'm already trying to get to the end of the episode, and I can't do it. How frustrating.
Can I ask something?
Oh, I am, yes. As are the Cybermen. Now, for once, refreshingly, even though they'd already sort of spoiled it for us, not with the name of the story... Other Cybermen are in it. I do know something, actually. It's by the Beatles, isn't it? Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other. Do you want any more?
What are those shows, folks?
Yes, Robert,
yes,
sorry.
No, why were Ace and the Doctor going there anyway?
Because it's the 25th anniversary episode and they're just doing it for the fun of it, really. I don't know.
Because they had to do the same story that they had just done with Remembrance of the Daleks, but with Cybermen.
I don't think it was, but it was the same remit, but not the same story.
Done.
Robert Vench Jr. says, well, remember we saw the magic potions during the Matt Smith time, in one of the TARDIS rooms. Thank you very much. And Robert gets one of these. Not you, Robert. Robert Vence gets one of those. Very good.
Wow, it's getting even worse for you, isn't it, Robert? At least it's not another Mary getting anyway, things, I tell you.
I found the scene where the Cybermen with their really cool little mouthpieces.
Well, we've got two Ians, too.
Oh, be quiet. To show up.
The other ones are
and
recording.
Then, because Ace is just about to get killed, and of course she thinks the Cybermen have saved her life, and we have a very cheesy was the word I actually came up with, as a one-word description for this story, funny enough. But this is the scene. Here we go.
Who are they?
Cybermen.
That's
so cheesy. Come on, Sylvester. Pull yourself together.
And I warned Ian that you were going to say
well,
that.
I actually did it right after I watched the episode. I was like, Cybermen.
He's only told to say that. It's in the script. Come on.
No, I'm not dissing
that's
Mr.
what
Mr.
he
McCoy.
Says. It's how it says
the way
it.
That he says.
But it was exceptionally cheesy. Alan T. Butcher says the Gallifreyan arrow was Time's arrow.
Sorry?
Alan T. Butcher. He said the Gallifreyan arrow was Time's arrow. Gone very quiet all of a sudden here
I
at the Twin Gym.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either.
Oh, Alan, they don't understand.
Is he referring to the arrow that Painforth's got? And it was... never mind. I don't care. No. It's Alan T. Butcher.
What about...
He's trying to throw us off the scent.
Yeah.
What about the arrow from the Robots of Sherwood?
What?
Remember that one?
What's that got to do with the price?
Yeah, what has
China?
It got to do with it? I really don't know what you're talking about.
It was gold.
No, there's an arrow in that's being used against...
Unrelated. Yeah. Unrelated.
I often do things which are unrelated.
Yeah.
No.
<Yes.
laughs>
Anyway, so Painforth shooting these Cybermen with these golden arrows. And as I say, it's almost like Corona gold, this stuff, because it really does... Yeah. Just the mere mention of it makes Cybermen put face masks on. It's just... particularly worried about it, shall we say. And then Painforth and Richard go wandering rather conspicuously through this sort of Windsor town thing.
I think they would be less conspicuous nowadays walking around like that.
Yeah, people are just thinking they're in cosplay. Or they're just there for
just cosplayers or reenactment people.
Reenactment people,
exactly.
Oh, me and you said that at the same time, Kirby.
And he gets another one.
You're going to try harder, Robert. Put the effort in, man.
Alan T. Butcher says...
I've got one by now.
Hey, Debbie, yeah. I think Alan's answering you. Alan T. Butcher says, Painforth used the arrow, the doctor said so. As in Gallifreyan arrow, Time's arrow.
Wasn't Time's arrow the name of a Next Generation story?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
I love it. But
Times New Roman is a font.
Yeah.
It's my favourite font.
Anyway, the Doctor, meanwhile, lands in this sort of valley place and holds this bow out ahead of him. And, of course, it glows because they've got this fancy way of
I
shining light.
I love the way
it
flashes. That's so cool.
It is quite cool, actually.
Well, there is still a clip of how they're filming that whole scene from rehearsal to actually filming. On YouTube. I'll post a link to it.
Well,
later.
I'm sure everybody's going to be totally and utterly thrilled to bits that you're going to be posting that on Facebook. And everybody...
you can even see the guy next to the camera putting a piece of cardboard in front of the light, which is reflecting off the bow.
Yeah, and I'm sure
the
views for that video are going to go up tenfold after you post that on our group. Fantastic. And they'll be absolutely thrilled to bits.
Just ignore them, Kirby.
Meanwhile,
was that Robert?
This rather, actually, very cool.
How did Lady Penfort get away from Marinus?
What?
She walks away.
She's Marinus.
Oh, God. Anyway, this rather cool graphic for the spaceship. No, it's quite cleverly done because it moves in sort of a way that gave it a sort of depth. I thought they did rather well with this particular bit of special effect, even if you can see the rotor blades of the helicopter as it's landing. the funniest bit of all is when Painforth and Richard meet the Tough Nuts. I dare say call them skinheads, but their hair could have been a little bit shorter. Here we go. This bit made me laugh.
Are you looking at me?
Yeah.
Stand aside.
What are you, social workers?
Out of my lady's way.
We want to tell you our problems.
Yeah, come on in.
Will you be turned into rats?
We already have been.
Yeah.
Poor ones.
Yes, sir.
Come on in.
Money.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, coming in.
Social work.
Plenty of chances, do ya?
Yeah, so they're really good fun. I like them. Pointless characters, but...
Master, oh, I have a question.
Yes?
What's the problem with social workers? Why do they think they're social workers?
Because they're naughty boys. They would have social workers looking after them probably in their childhood and have something against them. Is that... Can I explain?
I guess.
No? Okay. It's a social service kind of thing where, you know, they've grown up in the system and whatever.
That's
and so there's a social worker assigned to their case.
Yeah, and that's exactly right,
Ian. They would have to check in and stuff. He's just trying to get a feel for the thing. And, to bring us back to the show, what is with Richard? He looks like discount Richard Branson.
He does. Oh, you're doing well today, Ian. Oh, I've just dropped my...
Oh, I know.
I'm sure.
Thank you.
Give him a ding.
I just gave him a blimmin' ding. Pay attention. Robert Vance Jr. said that was a title used in Star Trek Next Generation, Time Arrow. Neil James says, hi, social workers. I'm writing some feedback, but my laptop seems to be blasted by Cybermen, so I'm doing it on my phone, which is taking ages. Now, I have trouble with that because the letters are too close together and I've got very fat thumbs.
Yeah.
Stylus.
Thumbs.
Yeah. Anyway, so meanwhile, the doctor and hang on, my thingy stopped. Yeah, it's come back again. Doctor and Amel, Ace wander across this sort of field and find this rather cool looking castle, which the Cybermen have already.
It's called a folly.
I call it a castle. It may be a folly in real life, Kirby, but I'm going to call it a castle. The Cybermen have already found this place, and I do love how silver the Cybermen actually are in this story. It's the first time they actually really do look silver and shiny.
I think it's stupid because I don't think anybody really thought, okay, we're going to nickel coat these things, and now they reflect like a cinema.
Yeah, gun. So you can see the camera crew and everything.
It just seems to be a problem. They're too shiny.
I think
they were running into with the face plates and some parts on the chest or whatever is that they were oxidizing and turning a gold color.
I did find you talk about the chest plate things
they had to find a special spray paint that would stick to the metal, you know, to turn them back to silver.
But I did find though when they were lying down, the chest plate things rose up and looked very plasticky. I don't know if they were supposed to look plastic, but they certainly did. And then we have another comedy.
Because they were plastic.
Plastic and metal.
Then we have another comedy moment that somehow Lady Painfort and Richard, they didn't kill the tough nuts. They just tied them up and hung them upside down by a tree and burnt their clothes.
Burnt their clothes. Yeah. I'm like, what's with burning their clothes? I'm like, that's a step.
Yeah, exactly. And also the fact that they're wearing comedy underwear as well.
Very Monty Python-esque scene, wasn't it?
The only unrealistic thing about that was how clean their underwear was. Just saying.
That's not where you were supposed to be looking in the scene, you know that, right?
Well, why give them underwear with kissing logos on them?
You were just looking a bit too hard at them.
Beg your pardon? Anyway, the doctor and a sort of hang around for a bit while things start to develop. Lady Painfort shows Richard his grave, which is a bit harsh. And
wait, I just realized.
You did?
Richard is actually in the modern world of 1988 at the end of the story, so how can that be his grave?
He gets taken back by the doctor.
Do you not watch this story, Kirby?
He takes him back. They're having tea at his place.
Yeah.
And just because there's a grave marker doesn't mean that he's dead and underneath it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had grave. We've had the doctor's grave in the history of Doctor Who. But he's still with us. Yeah, come on, Kirby.
Try not to fall asleep during the episode.
Kirby, the last scene.
Hey, I'm not the only person who fell asleep watching it.
Oh, here we go.
Who else did?
Me.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Oh no.
Anyway, I'm moving forward.
Ian and I have been having a discussion behind you guys' backs.
Yeah, and he's still not getting many dings.
Anyway, the Doctor and Ace get their own back on the two chaps with the headphones because Ace uses a bit of Nitro 9 to blow them to smithereens. Isn't that murder? Just wondering.
You mean You mean pub dads are us? Is that the pub dads are us rental company?
Yeah.
I mean, where did they find these henchmen? I mean, it looked like they went into a pub and said, "You two guys want to stand around with headphones on?" Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we'll
no,
do it.
He didn't say, didn't blow them up. Meant. Sorry, I got that bit wrong because you lot was talking. Yeah, they didn't blow that up, as you call them, henchmen. Henchmen, Ace blew up the spaceshipy entrancey thing or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And then the Cybermen then shot the
Cybermen off them.
If you go back
to the bridge scene, and when the Doctor and Ace go in the water and they go to the bridge and they watch and they're like, they smile. I'm like,
well, the Cybermen.
What? They're like, oh yeah, we're cool. We got them. Good. Yay. We're happy. You're working with Cybermen. We don't do happy. I'm sorry.
Hang on. I've got to find that scene again just before Ace gets all grumpy because she actually calls the death of these two henchmen. It's just David Banks and his traditional dialogue. Presentation. Here we go. This is the scene.
Betrayal. Kill them.
Kill them. Love that. Kill them. It's got a very sort of brilliant way of phonetically and pronouncing stuff, which is that only David Banks could do. Oh no, I got that wrong. Only David Banks and Ian Bissett can do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent.
You see, I want to see. Surely somebody has done that on YouTube where they've got David Banks to voice the new Cyberman. I want to see that.
Oh,
yeah. Somebody has to have David Banks do a voice.
They could have done
Cyberman.
That. They should have done it.
Yeah.
Although no, I think even Nicholas Briggs, sort of partly friend of the show, would have probably enjoyed that. Well, I upset him, didn't I? He's never got over that, and that was over 10 years ago. He's never got over it.
What did you do to him?
Nor have I, for that matter, actually, because I didn't mean to upset him. I was just being journalistic. Right then, moving on.
Go back and listen to that episode.
No, because I still listen. Every time I listen to it, I know I was right.
No, I was telling Ian to do so.
He won't want to do that.
What were you right about?
You can fill me in later, Curbs.
Anyway, so what's going on here? Oh yeah,
slide into my DMs later.
Lady Painfort and Richard find the nemesis, and a bow is presented to it. Sorry, an arrow presented to it, and then the Cybermen turn up. The Doctor and Ace skulk in the woods somewhere and watch. The Doctor does some faffing around with his gadget and reveals. Hang on, we've got to do the ridiculously cheesy bit of dialogue.
Cyber warships. Thousands of them.
Exactly the same tone of voice as the previous cheesy bit.
You've got to do that for the episode ending.
Did you guys notice a returning prop in this episode?
Yes.
Apart the Cyberman like viewer thing.
Oh yeah.
Yes,
that
I saw that.
Earthshock. Yeah, they had that in the castle.
Did they? Well, I didn't notice that.
Did.
Oh, Ian.
Where they were telling when the signal's getting jammed.
So, yeah,
a little white ball in the middle of it. Yeah.
I think I recognise it, yeah.
Well done for spotting that. I did give you a ding, but it was a bit quiet.
Meanwhile,
the Doctor and Ace run towards...
I spotted it too.
God. Right, okay. Right, okay. Listen for everybody. Apart from Mary, who wasn't talking about snake. Right then.
I should get a ding for not interrupting.
You should get a
ding for being Mary. There you go.
Oh, God. Right.
Master.
Right. No offence, Laurie. No offence, Laurie. There we go. All those dings count for everybody, so I can get on with the blimmin' show. Right then, so the Doctor and...
Master.
Oh, Jesus.
I have a question.
Why is it on the ones he doesn't like we spend longer talking about?
Yes. I have a question. Seeing all the Cybermen standing there with their silver-painted cricket gloves...
Oh,
why
my God.
Is only the right glove have the two fingers?
Yeah, but that's the one that...
Because it's
because that's the one that's most likely to get broken by the cricket ball.
Yeah.
If you're right-handed.
When you're holding
that's
the bat.
That's where the ball will go, yeah. Go smack, crack, bollocks, that goes my fingers, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But it was, that made it more obvious they were cricket gloves.
Yeah.
Are those cricket gloves? Well, yeah.
So the Doctor and Ace have got a little plan. They come and tease the Cyber Leader by playing around with the bow for a bit. The Cyber Leader could easily just shot them and got it snatched off them, but he forgets that he can do that. And the Doctor rather sort of theatrically gives the nemesis the boo. And, all hell breaks loose, moving forward.
And I can tell you why David Banks, they don't want David Banks' voice for modern Cybermen.
Why?
Because David Banks' Cybermen are emotional.
Yeah.
That's why I want to hear him. I want to hear it because it's like, I don't know. I kind of dug these ones.
It's still the brilliant voice.
It is brilliant. Anyway, Lauren X says, I kept hearing her name as Lady Painful. It's very appropriate.
Yes, I did too. Yeah. I did too, Laurie. I had to go and look it up on Wiki what she was actually called.
And then she says, in relation to me throwing the bell over my shoulder, quite all right. I will retrieve it in due course. Probably when Alan's doing his feedback. And then, back to the story, obviously Lady Painful and Richard have to make their way to the castle. They get a lift with a rather charming American lady.
Oh,
called Mary Blitzlang.
Yeah, she is.
To Windsor.
Hang on. I loved her. I think she was the best part.
Here she is.
She lifted it, didn't she?
Great car.
For me, it was just that one character too many. It wasn't her fault. It's just she was the last in the car.
Yeah.
You're talking over it.
Honey. Jump right in.
Yeah, no, Mary's a lot prettier than her, but I thought
what I also love about this scene is while in spite of any other dialogue going on, there sits Lady Painford with, "I'm going to take over the world."
Yeah. And that's my theory. Yeah.
Yes.
Sure you
little side glances like, "What are you?"
She I do just takes think red. It's English eccentricity, I think.
I do think that
we are so close to it
the,
all.
The nemesis is quite cute, actually, in a sort of spray painted whiteness. I thought she was very cute and almost like childlike. She got on with Ace quite nicely, anyway. Anyway, so they get dropped off eventually.
Like Ian said, it's one character too many.
What, the actual nemesis statue?
No, we're talking about
the. Oh, you mean the American lady?
Oh, here is a Sixth Doctor. Goodness. Here's a Sixth Doctor story from Big Finish, set in current day.
Uh-oh.
With David Banks in the 80s Cybermen.
Yes.
It's called The Hour of the Cybermen.
Yeah, they were doing that series of new Doctors, old monsters thing. Yeah.
Okay.
That's part of the series. Yeah.
Splendid. Cool. Right then, so that's a great lighting. There's a, oh, good grief, I nearly got to it. Yes.
Nothing.
No. Robert Vence Jr. says, "Lol, the female was J.R. Ewing." Anyway, there's a scene in which Ace finds herself in a spot of bother with a Cyberman, which is in fact the Cyber Leader because he's got the black thingies. Black handlebars, but the lighting they shine the light through the grill on her face, and that's really quite cool direction. That in fact, there's a lot of cool direction in this story, to be fair. Anyway, so the Doctor's quite smug during episode 3 as he sort of manipulates everything to happen the way he wants it to, and he sort of more or less programs the nemesis to go and blow up the cyber fleet. I am paraphrasing because Kirby's basically dug his heels in for most of this story, so we can't actually get through it. I'm pretty sure I haven't missed anything. It's basically what happens. It goes off and blows up the cyber fleet, committing genocide against the Cybermen. Of course, the last Cyberman...
Like you just did two stories before.
Yep. The last Cyberman alive is the Cyber Leader, and I think he gets done in... Is it with a bit of gold again? I don't know. And then
news of his death drove him insane.
And then the Doctor and Ace have
the same scene as the last scene with the Dalek in.
Someone's setting off fireworks outside here.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yeah,
I thought it was just people getting annoyed with me still not being able to end the story, which is how we end now. We're in 45 minutes in. Anyway, then we get the cheesy scene where the Doctor and Ace are playing chess at Richard's house back in the old times, because it clearly isn't in modern time at all, because they're all back in the old times. And then we get this.
He says, "How do I get home?" And they're like, "We'll take you."
Yeah.
No, because he says, I'm stranded in this time. What do I do? And they're like, don't worry, we'll take you.
I got a funny feeling, Kobe, I don't know if you're aware of this, that the Doctor has this special device that can travel in time and space. And I think he might have been able to use that to get Richard back to where he is.
Master, I have a missive from Matthew.
Oh, yes.
He says, I would have if I hadn't overslept. Accidentally set my 10:30 and 11 alarms for PM, not AM. I was looking forward to coming on. Right. So I just texted him back and said, come on now.
And what did he say?
He won't.
Yeah.
He won't.
Right. We're just getting to the good bit.
Yes. Copyright Rhys Parton, 2011, I think that one, wasn't it? Copyright.
Yes.
Right, cheesy bit, here it comes.
I believe that is exactly
near it's not. What a surprise.
Yeah, he's always sleeping.
Yeah. Okay. Right, I'm poised to press the button for the cheesy bit. Are we ready?
He should be sleeping.
Yes.
Oh, he still interrupted it. Oh, my God. let's have another go. Cheesy bit, here it comes.
But I think you will like this.
Doctor, who are you?
Stop breathing on me. You haven't got a face mask on.
Anyway, so that's it. So, Silver Nemesis, right. Okay. it's not that bad, for God's sake. That one we watched the other week, was it last time? That was terrible. But this isn't, it's just a bit of fun. It's not blimmin' the best thing ever. But it's supposed to be a little bit of a second homage to the history of Doctor Who during this season. It wasn't that bad. I quite enjoyed it. It was fairly predictable what was going to happen here and there.
Didn't sound like you enjoyed it.
It was good. I quite like watching this. Again, it's only three parts. It's got a lot of funny bits in it. I think it's meant to be lighthearted. It is. So, on the whole, like I say, it's not the best thing ever, but it's not the worst thing ever. It's okay. I don't get particularly embarrassed by this particular story. And I said the words particularly twice in that sentence, which is really awkward. But, yeah. Yeah, so it's not that bad. This really isn't. It's just not that good either. Who should we go for first? I've got a plethora of people to decide on. I'll tell you what we never normally do first. Debbie. That sounds a bit rude, doesn't it? We don't never ask
tell us about
Debbie.
Licorice All Sorts as well.
Do I never get to finish my sentences without Kirby coming in?
He's talking about Licorice All Sorts, Debbie. He's asking you about Licorice All Sorts.
I was about to say, I've got two to discuss before this one, surely.
Oh, it's probably just as well I'm asking you to do it first then, isn't it?
I don't even know
why.
I'll
get you a hot cocoa then.
Go on then. I'll give you my microphone for 5 minutes.
I get to listen to Debbie talk about three stories.
No, it's quite easy.
I'm muting my microphone for 5 minutes.
It's quite easy. It's not going to be that long. Obviously, with Daleks 3 weeks ago, that's brilliant. It's one of my all-time favourite stories.
Oh, I was going to give you a ding. I've
loved it. Pardon? Oh, carry on. Okay. Absolutely loved it. It's classic Who for me. The bit when the Dalek elevates up the stairs was absolutely terrifying back when I was a kid and still gave me goosebumps. Absolutely did.
Can I mention something about that? Did you notice the string on the front of the Dalek?
Yeah, of course I did now.
I can't not notice it now.
No, because obviously I looked into it, I've listened to podcasts about it and everything, so I'm always looking out for the bits that people point out now. But that story for me, always good, always fun, absolutely love it. I like the music, I like the characters, I like the whole concept of the different factions of Daleks, and so I really enjoyed that. But then obviously Happiness Patrol was a bit of a letdown, really. Didn't enjoy that half as much as the previous week. Obviously I found it quite difficult to find to watch as well, which probably didn't help with my enjoyment of it, because I was sort of looking for it all over different forums to find something other than just episode 2 and a sneak shot of episode 3, which was a bit hard. But eventually I watched it, but I just didn't find it had the momentum or you just weren't as invested in the characters, because almost all the characters in it were pretty horrible, to be honest. And the Candyman, who was my, Isla's nemesis from Doctor Who is Vashti Naradu. She won't go near those episodes. I, as a kid, was terrified of the Candyman. Now he's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Now he's the funniest thing I've ever seen, and he gets glued to the floor by his own glue coat. You know?
Yeah.
How was I terrified of this? Why was this my fear? So, you know, I've explained this to Isla, so hopefully, because she's now up to Vashti Naradu, you know, the books, the science in the library. She's up to that now, and where she's been catching up and doing things, her own watching Doctor Who. So I'm hoping she'll let me show it to her. So that was a myth. Definitely 4.5 out of 5 for Daleks, about 2 to 3 for Happiness Patrol. And for this one, it was silly. It was just daft. It was, well, it didn't, I watched it all in one go because I just felt like doing it. So it was watchable, definitely. Yeah. I could watch it. It wasn't one of those where I watched 25 minutes ago, oh, that's enough of that for an hour. Well, another day or two, I'm going to. I watched all three and I enjoyed it as the, you know, the 3 25-minute episodes all in one go. It worked, but I just felt from the beginning my immediate question was, why are they shooting at the Doctor and Ace?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not ever explained.
No.
And then it just seemed to be that all the way through, and I was nitpicking, and I was like, okay, no, this isn't good. But then the American lady showed up, and I thought that was brilliant, because I think, was it Lillian or Laurie posted, do you have any grey poupon and things like that? You know, it was just, it really did remind me of that. So I thought it was good. I've been to where they, you know, filmed a lot. I've been around there quite a bit, Windsor and oh, I can't remember the name of the other castle. Been there quite a bit too.
Arundel.
It brought back some good memories and things. So I enjoyed it. I found the whole concept of them leaping back and forth. And there was one point we didn't really, I don't know if we really pointed out because we were all talking over each other during this bit, but the bit when they end up in her house, which is now a tea shop.
Yeah.
And instead of leaving through the front door, they break the window.
Yes. Yeah,
it was another one of those moments where I was like,
yeah, but it wasn't obvious how they were supposed to get out, because there was modern. It was a modern lock, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just felt like.
But the thing is, it's
fun story. And
but earlier they walked into the house and and into that room. So it's surely the layout of the place people didn't change that much when they made it a restaurant.
Well, the people sat there next to them at the table, which is practically in the same spot as the table was that the old guy was at. And they just sort of barely look up from their tea, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nitpicking.
Oh, more time travellers.
Hello. Oh, look, they're armed. Let's carry on with our tea. I just felt it was silly, but I quite enjoyed it. It was just a really silly, silly tale, but fun.
Thank you, Demi. I suppose you deserve one of these.
Well,
don't get upset about it, Robert. Okay. Tim Drury.
Come back to your tea now.
Tim Drury says, I see a Fez. Fezzes are cool, so we've got to play this. Tim Drury. Oh, for God's sake, why can't it start right from the start? Let's try again. Tim Drury. One of the greatest jingles ever heard on the airwaves.
We need a jingle.
Why don't you see if Matthew's available?
Oh, what's a good... have you asked him?
Go on.
I asked him.
Yeah? Okay, well, try then.
Oh, by the way, he said, didn't you all start the show at 2 Eastern, 1 Central? And he said, UK time change. Hang on.
Well, you should have been ready earlier.
Well, I'm ringing him presently. Let's hope he answers.
Press
the
green button that says join the call, and he can do it.
Yeah, actually, he could have done that. That's a very good point, Mary.
Yeah. Yay!
Oh, what? You can have my ding if you like.
That's what she said. Tim Drury says, I always thought Cybermen were grey. Then in 1988, they suddenly told me they were silver. There you go. Very good point, in fact. Well done, Tim.
Well, in the new series, it's called Nightmare in Silver because it's about Cybermen.
Indeed. Right then, who we got next? I reckon we should go over to the Bartlett Sloan home. That's got good reference. The Bartlett Sloan home for Mr. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
You want my opinion?
You didn't like it. Let's move on.
Consent's not right. Talk over.
Yeah. Your kink you've already been giving us.
Absolute bollocks. With a few funny bits. There, I'm done.
Perfect comedy timing from Mr. Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Brilliant. What do you mean? It wasn't that bad, Kirby, honestly.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
It was silly.
When we talked about this one 7 years ago,
yeah.
I had no idea we were going to go do the entire journey. And I said 7 years ago that was the last time I planned to watch this one.
Oh.
And unfortunately, I had to watch it again.
Oh dear.
But I fell asleep this time.
Okay. Acceptable to a degree. Oh, who should we go for next then? I reckon we should go for Mr. Robert Haynes.
Well, I quite like it despite all the silly things in it. I did the same thing as Debbie and watched it all in one go.
Can I say, can I interrupt you there, Robert? That's what a lot of people say about this show, funny enough, but carry on.
I thought he was going to get a ding.
But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, why? There's so many characters and so many factions and Cybermen that can't even shoot straight.
Yep, same as usual then.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, they obviously trained with the Stormtroopers in Star Wars. But a lot of silly and why are they going to Windsor and all this kind of stuff? It's just a lot of it doesn't make sense and there's just too much going on.
Science fiction fantasy TV show.
Yeah, but besides all that, I really enjoy it.
Hey.
It's just a fun little romp kind of
it
thing.
Is.
Yeah, I got a bell.
You got two, but you didn't listen to the other one.
Ding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So
is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, enjoyable.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Master.
Very, very concise. Yes, yes.
Matthew says, trying to sign into Skype at the moment.
Okay, so, we'll probably still be here.
Do we do Mary?
Tell him what? Pardon? Sorry about this, Mary.
I beg your pardon, Kirby. That kind of a show, man.
Does Mary have a say in this?
Phil's wearing out.
Tell him to join the call.
Okay, he says he's signed in.
Yeah, tell him to join the call, please. Where are we up to? I think we should, therefore...
He signed in. He has signed in. Add him to the call.
Thank you for the update.
He can add himself. Oh, for goodness sake.
He can
tell
him.
Yeah.
Now what's happening, Kirby?
I add myself.
I bet you do.
Yeah, you can add yourself.
Here, I'm telling him, add yourself to the call.
Yeah. What'd he say?
He hasn't said anything yet.
Oh, okay. This is wonders of modern technology.
He'll wait till we start talking.
Oh, he's here. Hello,
he's
Matthew. Matthew, you're muted.
Hello.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, goodness.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, this is going to have to. Play. Here we go.
Hallelujah.
Well deserved.
Right then.
You did it.
Yeah. Yes, there was a time change, Matthew.
Yeah, and probably Kirby gave you the wrong one.
Oh, by the way, may I say something?
No.
Oh, God, go
Matthew.
On.
No. Matthew, Ian. Ian, Matthew.
Hello, there, Matthew.
Hello.
Excellent.
How moving. A very moving greeting.
Yes.
I'm moved.
You've got to say excellent.
Excellent. Excellent.
Right, then. I don't suppose you've got a quote, have you, Matthew? Just for the sake of it.
I did have a couple lined up, so
yeah, go on, then.
First one on my list, a very palpable hit.
Indeed, sir.
Yep, that's one we didn't use. Well done.
There we go.
We'll stick with that one then. Right then. Thankfully for you, you don't have to put up with any interruptions. Right? We've actually got through talking about the episodes themselves. So now we're on the what we think about the episodes themselves, and you've saved Ian from his bit because now you can do your bit.
Ah, you're welcome, Ian.
Pardon?
carry
on.
Let's be perfectly honest about this story. It is a very much a mixed bag.
No
doubt about it. You know, from particularly with the supporting cast in my mind, because everybody is all over the place. But I think that's owed much more to the script than it is to anything else. And I think that's in part – I know Kirby was tagging me on Facebook last night about the extended edition. which I had planned to get up early again today to watch before we recorded. That plan kind of went out the window. some things never change on the show, I say. and I have to admit, it's been a few years since I've watched the extended edition, but the extended edition of this, which was released on VHS in 93, and for reasons I've never been able to quite understand, wasn't released when this got the DVD release in 2011, I think it was.
Is it on the German release?
It's on the German release. Yeah. My understanding is that the German release had to go and completely reconstruct the thing from scratch.
Wow.
And had to completely re-clear all the footage and everything. So it may be a case that there simply wasn't a DVD quality master for them to go and use. I have no idea.
And another thing, the deleted scenes on this DVD, they don't have all the deleted scenes, so you can't put together your own version.
Right. I was fixing to mention that. So I suspect I probably mentioned that 7 years ago when we did.
Yes, you did.
Was I on that episode?
Yes.
Oh,
you know, there's a database out there where you can check.
God. Yeah, I got it
bookmarked. But I think, you know, the story, even in the extended edition, is a slightly hot mess from a script point of view. And I think part of that is that it's a sequel to a story, or in this case, what, three stories that nobody has ever seen. Which can work. I mean, we certainly saw that with Remembrance of the Daleks, picked up on things that we hadn't seen before. Face of Evil way back in the Tom Baker era. The problem is that if you're going to do it, you have to tell a cohesive story to begin with so that the audience can fill in the gaps. And the problem with Silver Nemesis, especially in its broadcast version, but even in the extended version, is that it's not a cohesive story. It is exactly what it is. It's four separate subplots that occasionally intersect with one another, but doesn't really make a lick of sense if you try to put it all together. And there's just stuff in the story that doesn't make any sense anyway. My favorite bits from the first episode, when the doctor gets the bright idea, oh, we'll go to the Queen of England and explain the situation to her that they're fixing to get invaded by aliens, because the doctor hasn't spent how many years working as unit scientific advisor at that point. So it's that kind of thing that's kind of inexcusable, and I don't understand, other than desperation and the fact that John Nathan Turner in particular didn't seem to care much about stories in the commissioning phase, how in the world a script as incohesive as this made it through the process of getting commissioned, let alone filmed, or I guess recorded because it's on videotape. That said, every Nemesis has a silver lining. Mm-hmm. And I do think the thing that saves the story, at least from my point of view, is Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred. And just the wonderful chemistry that they have between them. And when everything else in the story is gone to pot and doesn't make a lick of sense, the two of them remain immensely watchable. And at least their portions of the story kind of sort of make sense, even if nobody else's does. So I'm a proud Seventh Doctor fan, as I think everybody here knows, and as most of the listenership who's been with us for a while will know. But this is not the greatest Seventh Doctor story by any means or stretch of the imagination.
And well, Matthew, you're blaming the script, but Andrew Cartmell is blaming that there was way too much material that got cut out, so that there are things that happen that don't make any sense because we didn't see all that scene or a scene that led up to some of the things that happened.
That's possible as well. But I think that's also, having seen the extended edition, which has a lot of that material put back in, it still doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was stuff that just wasn't filmed to begin with, which in that case, that's the fault of the director. Is it Chris Cloth? I think you directed this.
Yeah.
It's his fault as well as John Nathan Turner for not having that material filmed to begin with. Because I've got the extended version on VHS. It's sitting in the cabinet in the closet I keep for the old VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. And while it makes more sense than the broadcast version, and certainly is paced better, I don't think it actually makes any more sense from what I recall from the last time I viewed it.
Okay, so, well, I didn't see the extended edition.
I wouldn't, but there you go. I think I did have it. Where have we got? Laurie Nix waves at Andy Nunny, so I presume Andy's watching somewhere along the line. Alan D. Butcher says, a sequel to three stories we never saw. Perfect, Matthew. And then Robert Vince Jr. says, agree, Matthew. Oh, Matthew, you have some fans. Robert Vince Jr. says, the story was meh and all over the place. So there you go. Right, this is what the second bit we've all been waiting for. It is Ian Bissett.
Oh, you've been waiting for this? Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. A little pressure.
It was excellent.
Excellent.
You're on, Ian.
Excellent.
No, it drove me insane. I mean, everything that everybody said, pretty much. I mean, it's just one of those things where I remember when I first saw it, because this was my first ever Seventh Doctor story. This was what we got shown for, because we got this during the anniversary, but we hadn't got to McCoy yet, so we got like a sneak peek and we got Silver Nemesis. And it was fun back then. The more and more you look at it, the more and more you're like, the one thing that caught me today for the first time was when they're in Windsor Castle, they've been caught, and then they're like, we don't have time to mess around with the authorities, and they leave.
Yeah,
like they'd be allowed to. like they just, I was like, we're done here. We're just leaving. Like, it just doesn't happen. You don't just like, okay, we're no longer under your custody. Bye. and just silly stuff like that. But you know, it is. It's Doctor Who, and it's the problem with this whole end of Doctor Who, where there were some really kind of neat ideas, and they were obviously being loaded into these stories from all the other material we hear about them and stuff, but they just never make it quite right on screen. it makes me wonder why they went down to three episodes. It's like four seemed to work so well for the show, or two for a nice little short adventure.
Well, you know why.
Three, it's either too long or too short, you know. I'm sure you're going to tell me, Kirby.
Kirby's first thing.
J&T was still getting budgets for the 6 and 4 business, and so he would split. This is the second or third time, I'm sure Matthew will tell me, where he did an all-outdoor and all-in-studio story. Gotcha.
This was the second season they had done it, because Delta and the Bannerman in Dragonfire last season were the exact same thing.
Mm. But did they do it with the last season?
They'll do it next for the next season as well. That's why you end up with Ghostlight and Survival.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's fun, but don't look too deep into it.
Exactly.
So much stuff that's just crazy and. But there's a lot of, and as I was saying to Kirby earlier, it's like, it's a mess, but Sophie and Sylvester are fantastic.
Yes,
throughout.
Agreed. I agree that they were fantastic. Yeah. All I said about the cheesy bits, there was a couple of cheesy segments, that's all I said. But that's because, like Robert said, he was directed to do it that way. Acceptable.
Yeah. And I mean, there's the bit that when they're just kind of like biding their time on the hillside, that slope, and Sylvester's kicked back and Sophie's kicked back. And I kind of like the kind of the air of confidence of these two time meddlers, as it were. See what I did there? where they're just kind of kicking back and like, this will keep them busy for a while. And then, of course, they make Sylvester do a backflip over to make it look cool.
Yep.
And just like, oh, you forced a Sylvester moment. Thank you. But that's me. Done.
Thank you, Ian. Right, then. The Isle of Wight, ladies and gentlemen, listener, is on the news.
Because it says, on the news.
Yes, it says seven detained and oil tanker security incident off the Isle of Wight now over. So there we go.
They think it was it wasn't pirates. They think it was stowaways instead.
Oh.
Well, they're sitting off the fireworks too.
Probably.
Not a good thing by oil tanker. Right then, that's all holding things up. For the highlight of the show, yes, everybody. Yes, Mary.
Well, I'm on board with all of you in that this was not a very good story. It felt slow and it felt stodgy with all kinds of scenes that didn't make any sense. I think the scene that epitomizes the way this whole story kind of went for me was near the end, you know, as we were coming to what should have been the climax of the story. But we've got the Doctor and Ace, the cyber leader, Lady Painfort, and Richard, maybe not even Richard there, but all standing around talking, each one waiting for the other one to say their piece so that they can say what they're supposed to say. And all I can think of is, you're the cyber leader. You're standing there with this big gun. Why aren't you just shooting them all? For God's
sake, because it doesn't say so in the script.
You're like just one more character in the story, you know, while everybody else is saying what they want to say. It just kind of epitomizes the absurdness of this story. And what I'm going to say next came mostly out of Andrew Cartmell's book, in that he wasn't that impressed with this story. In his book, he only devotes maybe just a few pages to it, because I guess there were just a lot of people, a lot of unhappy things happening at the time. J&T was being pilloried in the press for being this terrible showrunner, and all these fans wanted him, you know, off the show. So he wasn't happy, and so it kind of poisoned everything else going on around him. But Cardinal says that there are scenes, you know, in this story that just don't make sense, and he understands why. Because like Lady Painfort, when she's telling Richard about his tomb there, he wanted that to be a night scene to make it spooky. But there it is in the middle of the day, so it has no impact whatsoever. And he says that the scene where they're trying to leave, that Lady Painfort and Richard are trying to leave the room, they can't get out the door. The door won't open. And so she throws the chair through the window. But the way it broadcasts is that she just looks like she's having a hissy fit and throwing a chair out the window, which mm-hmm. is something that kind of came across. And he says that for all of his faults, he does credit the fact that this story actually does, you know, come together at the end. It all, you know, coordinates well at the end, which he says is better than how everything falls apart in Battlefield. So it's like, oh, okay, then I know I've seen Battlefield once, you know, years ago, but I don't remember how it ends. But apparently he doesn't think very highly of Battlefield either.
We'll find out.
Yeah, and his attempt to make the Doctor more mysterious. This is the first time I've had this explained for me, because he and J&T were so sick of all the explanations going on with the Doctor over the years, that he started out as the first Doctor, you know, being this mysterious guy that we really don't know much about, but he has this amazing impact on things. But then over the years, they started providing explanations and more explanations. You know, now we know where he's from, and now we know that there's more Time Lords, and you know, this body of explaining the Doctor had built to the point where he just became this everyday chump. He's just one more Time Lord among many, and they can even put him on trial, you know, maybe kill him. So they wanted to get away from that and take the Doctor back to that place where he is mysterious, and there's suggestions even in this story. And I guess it'll come up in other stories where we really don't know what time in Gallifrey he came along. Mm-hmm. And the scene in this story is Ace asking him about the Viridium, where it comes from. And he said, well, it comes from Gallifrey, and it was brought by Omega or made by Omega. And she says, and? He says, and Rassilon. And she says, and? And he just gives her a look and kind of changes the subject and goes on to other things, because they're planting the idea that maybe he is older, goes back to more early days. You know, maybe he's one of the original Time Lords rather than, you know, one that came along much later.
The timeless child, by any chance?
Yeah, so that idea being planted that he is really older, more mysterious, and more manipulative, you know, than has been we've been allowed to think along the time. So, so I understand that now, and maybe I'll appreciate it better.
Okay.
So that's my bit.
Why? Thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. Alan T. Butcher has committed a sacrilege, but I'll read it out anyway. Oil tanker at the Isle of Wight, spelled W-H-I-T-E. I thought it must be a rhyming euphemism. Sacrilege, Alan, sacrilege. Okay.
Now, if you said that there's a Master, if you said there's a possibility that they were pirates, is one of them going, Mr. Fibuli?
Anyway,
umbrage at the way they spell white.
Yes. This is what Andrew Cartmell has to say.
Silver Nemesis is a very interesting one. One of my strongest memories of it is that working with Kevin Clark, a very gifted writer who'd just come off writing some very hard-hitting World War II dramas for ITV. He was working on a show called Wish Me Luck. And so in the aftermath of that, it seemed quite natural to introduce a load of neo-Nazis as the bad guys mm-hmm. in this Cyberman story. So and Kevin is an extremely good action writer, very good thriller writer. So his talents were well suited to that. But we ended up with a script full of Nazis. There's all this, the Nazis do this, the Nazis do that. And at one point, John Nathan Turner, the producer, got cold feet and he freaked. And he said, we can't have a script full of Nazis. So thankfully, in those days, we just about had word processors. They'd just come lumbering onto the scene back in this prehistoric epoch. So we just did a global search and replace of Nazis with paramilitaries, and then it was fine.
Still felt like Matt Nazis to me. There you go. That was very brief.
The swastika on the desk kind of gave it away.
Well, yeah.
Well, and the flight of the Valkyrie and all that. it's like Nazi overload in that one sweep. When they go down to the guy at the computer, this is like, wow.
Yeah, they said they took it out of the script, but that the director put a lot of the stuff back in.
Alan T. Butcher says, that wasn't me, it was a spell checker. So there you go. Right, Kirby.
Yes?
I have a funny feeling you posted a request for feedback.
Of course, I was late in posting it, but still we got lots of feedback.
And then you put up loads of pictures and people were feeding back on different pictures.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
As in the late Kirby Bartlett one?
Dentopodent.
Robert Wentz Jr. Shows a picture of the Doctor and Ace holding a 25th anniversary cake and says, Ace, Professor, I hope there's enough cake for everyone. The Doctor says, wait till they taste the gold center of the cake. With Cybermen are standing around. He also says, Ace, I'm not much of a big band era fan, but Professor, it's great that I can listen to music from any era. The Doctor says, I personally enjoy Miles Davis. Whatever.
Yep. Okay.
I said, I forced myself through a single rewatch yesterday. This is 2 days ago. I was considering doing the infotext and commentary tonight, but I just can't. Blah. If only we could have Matthew join us on the podcast to defend the extended edition like he did 7 years ago when we last discussed the story. I'd like to see the extended edition. I suspect it might help. Matthew says, do you want to read that?
Yeah. Kirby Bartlett Sloan, I'm hoping to be on tomorrow if I wake up in time and don't have one of my debilitating headaches. Rewatching it at the moment in between the first and second episode for precisely that reason.
I don't think he'll show
up. Do you know what that reminds me of, Debbie? Going back many, many years, you and I will remember a television program called Points of View with Barry Took. And they used to have the different voices reading the different bits of mail that came into the show. That was very reminiscent of that. Anyway, carry on, Kirby.
Alan T. Butcher says, you would think the extended version would have helped given how much of it comes out of nowhere, you would think.
Yep.
Robert Wentz Jr. reminds me that I might want to point out who made guest appearances at the Castle Tour besides Nicholas. Robert Haynes said, okay, he's not going to say.
I'm sure he will.
Go on, Robert. What did you say?
I'm sure he will, Cobber.
is Robert with us?
Yeah, but we don't always follow the same link on Facebook while you're reading it.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure he will.
Oh, here he is.
There you go.
Yeah, sorry, Robert.
I accidentally pressed my mute.
Oh,
that was a bit silly, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's enough self-mutilation.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, LOL.
Hang on, we didn't get Robert's bit. Oh, Robert Wentz Jr. Sorry, I thought it meant Robert Haynes. I'm getting very confused.
Adam may tell him not to, but that I'm just pulling his chain. Robert Haynes said,
if not, I'll point everyone out.
and Robert Wentz Jr. says thanks and gives a thumbs up. and then Robert Wentz Jr.'s review of Silver Nemesis.
Oh, that's a long one.
Oh, well, that's secret. What she said.
Well, to start with, I was going to do like Mary did last week and go by memory, but I watched parts 1 and 3 to refresh my memory of the story. Like Mary would say, honey child, I've seen this story a lot. The race for control of the Hand of Omega. Oh, I'm sorry, the Nemesis is on. Another piece of Time Lord technology, living metal statue like in the Terminator 2 and later movies. Three factions, neo-Nazi Lady Penford and companion from 1633, and the Cybermen, their last appearance for control of Nemesis. We get time travel by blood sacrifice, Action Ace using her slingshot to shoot gold coins at the Cybermen chest plates. And why was the neo-Nazi so involved was never explained. So in the end, Lady Penford starts to lose her mind and joins Nemesis in the end. The neo-Nazis are destroyed, and the Cybermen fleet is wiped out, just like in Remembrance, with the Daleks and their planet destroyed. I agree with Kirby that this story is all over the place. For me, there's just too many elements. Fiona Walker as Lady Penfort was just too low-key for me as a villain. I feel this was the wrong story for the 25th anniversary. They should have made Remembrance of the Daleks the anniversary one, instead of taking elements of Remembrance. Boy, I have trouble saying that. Remembrance for the plot. I did like the jazz music, and seeing Nick Courtney make an appearance as a tourist was cool. Only parts of the story were okay. The story itself, not so much. This starts the idea of the Doctor being God. Also, this might interest Ian Bissett. All three parts were broadcast on TV New Zealand on 25th November of 1988, but you knew that. Uh-huh. My rating...
And I spoke about it earlier. It was, first McCoy episode.
I'm just repeating what he wrote.
And it's TVNZ is the preferred
fine
vernacular. It is. Yeah, it's TVNZ.
Z. That's a Z. It's a Z, not a Z.
TVNZ. Are you talking to
him?
No, it's not USA, it's USA.
Yeah, of course, there's a pang of jealousy because that music was always used to be played with Matthew and Kirby, or Matthew and Ben would have some sort of tape.
Anyway, Robert finishes.
Moving on.
My rating is 2.5 out of 5 on the level of the Happiness Patrol.
Can I mention something?
Yes.
Because he says that about the doesn't know why the neo Nazis were involved. But that goes back to what's it called Indiana Jones and the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah,
Nazis go for these kinds.
There's where they talk about it, isn't there? When he's making Ace work out the dates.
Yeah, they mentioned the 1938 and the eve of the Second World War.
Invasion of Poland. Yeah. So,
you know, if they wanted to,
the Nazis knew about it, and then they were waiting for the Nemesis to come back.
Yeah,
essentially, I guess.
If they wanted to hook him with Indiana Jones, they could have brought back the actor who was played the school, the head of the school in Remembrance, because he played Hitler in one of the Indiana Jones movies.
Last Crusade, Michael Sheard.
Yeah, but the chap who was some.
Earlier, so I don't think you get a ding on that one.
No. What about? Excuse me. Hello.
This season.
What about the chap who played what's his name in the City of Death, who was a baddie in one of the Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones.
Julian Glover.
Yes.
Julian Glover. I was offered him for Last
Crusade again.
Yeah.
I should have said yes to that, shouldn't I? I was offered to Julian Glover for FantasyCon.
Oh, you should have taken him.
You should have.
Yeah.
The trouble is, this world pandemic came along and wiped out all my people over a certain age.
I'd love to meet him. Please try and get him.
No.
Okay.
Lori Nick says, don't know what is wrong with the rest of yous, but I thoroughly enjoyed this one. It's action-packed. Yay. The relationship between the Doctor and Ace, it has historical elements, cheeky cameos, and not too dissimilar villains who get their just desserts. jazz plays a part. You all know that my father was a jazz producer, right? Yeah. I've been around that and other types of music most of my life. Anyway, Courtney Pine is a well-respected British jazz musician.
Yeah. And great museum as well, yes.
It was. Bit of a legend.
You're so fast, you
he was
you're right, playing,
and he was indeed playing excellent straight-ahead jazz bebop in this episode.
Hey, Kirby?
Yes?
Is it really hard to read all of these when people keep interrupting you?
That's part of the charm of the podcast.
Is it?
That's why I love you, Ian.
You're welcome, Bob.
She continues.
My work here is done.
She continues, I didn't have trouble following the story, even with the twists and turns, much like New Who, which has cherry-picked from this doctor's tenure.
Kirby?
I like
Kirby?
The...
Kirby?
Kirby?
Kirby? Kirby? I think Laurie Nix and Andy Nunney are having some sort of secret conversation between themselves, because Andy Nunney is waving at Laurie, but he's not waving at us.
What's he waving at her?
God, a hand. Oh. Please continue, Kirby.
Then she says, I like the unrevealed mystery doctor. The more recently revealed mystery doctor I'm not so enamored with. Much preferred this episode to last week's. Robert Wiss Jr. says, love the jazz music. It was blues last time. Okay. Alan T. Butcher obviously saying something before his missive, which I'm sure we will be hearing soon. I'm sure I was mildly intrigued at the time. I can't really like the supposed element of mystery they inserted here. It was totally insubstantial, totally inconsistent, and despite having more than a season to go, it led precisely nowhere. Like Richard, they lack the courage of their convictions. The Timeless Child mystery is infinitely better than this, as it is supported by glimpses. It's completely consistent and is bound to lead somewhere, big and bold. Lillian Robbins says, it's utter crap. Bullshit. It's garbage. Robert Wiss Jr. says, the next one coming up after the greatest show in the galaxy, Battlefield, is my favorite one next to Remembrance.
Kirby, if you slow your reading down a little bit, you might not have this trouble.
Alan T. Butcher says, anything looks good after...
Still can't do it.
Greatest show in the galaxy.
Greatest show in the galaxy. I'm trying to slow down. I will skip...
You know what, though? I can't get used to hearing Alan's voice without Mary.
Yeah. I'll skip the other Ian, Captain Kirk. Neil James says, Silver Nemesis, I remember being told once that a great way to establish that a character is evil is by having them hurt a defenseless animal. This adventure opens with Fourth Reich wannabe DeFloris and then Lady Penfort attempting to kill a parrot and a pigeon, respectively. Ooh, you evil assholes. Ooh. As an anniversary story, this is not much to shout about, but as a standard story, I quite like it. We have some pleasant location work, shot near where I live in West Sussex, and plenty of gunfights. The Doc and Ace basically watch some jazz, have a swim, do some time hopping, and then wander around the countryside. There are some weird script moments, including the Queen, Mrs. Remington, and the social worker fearing skinheads. I do love Richard's terrified line, they will eat us, when he sees the alpacas. There is a really good action scene with Ace in the warehouse, and the mystery around the Seventh Doctor is deepened. Certainly not a classic, but it's quite good fun. It 3 is. Stars out of 5.
Yes.
And was I better with my speed of reading, Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, I will attempt to do that from now on.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for the constructive criticism.
Well, you come across more clearly, and you don't trip over your words.
Yes. Well, Remembrance, for some reason, I have trouble saying Remembrance. I don't know why.
Omega.
Okay. Well, is that it?
Yeah, doing Remembrance this week.
Oh, Omega.
Is that it?
Yes, that is it.
Okay.
I did. Oh, wait. No.
Oh, God.
No. Someone said, first of all, I did find where Robert Wentz Jr. Shared the stuff. and there is a couple of comments. He shared it to the Doctor Who Today Facebook group, where Phil Devine says, love this story, batshit crazy, just as a Doctor Who story should be. And Dave Yadley says, 9 out of 10, great three-parter for intensity. That's apparently all of those comments. And then I believe Debbie said there's individual picture comments.
Well, you were putting up individual pictures and comments were coming up.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking.
I wasn't sure exactly if it was feedback, but, you know, it was...
Yeah, that's it. Consider feedback. One of them is Laurie Nix saying, pardon me, but would you have any Grey Poupon?
It was Laurie then. I thought it was.
Laurie Nix says, shows the neon, on the picture of the neo-Nazis, says, the boys from Brazil hunting parrots. And she also says on the picture of Lady Pimford and Richard, old school time travel.
That was so funny when they take that drink, and then they must have had to stand there for without any special effects, obviously going, woo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also posted the links to those two bits of the making of Doctor Who from the that PBS station. One is the scene rehearsal for that one scene where the doctor, where Ace is asking a doctor and they're going back and forth about Rassilon, etc. So that is kind of interesting.
Okay.
And the other is David Banks, mostly David Banks.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Thank you. Right then. Moving on to more feedback, I'm going to send over Mary to Mary, Linda and Terry Miles blurb. And I shall...
Oh, there's a couple of things on your announcement of the time change.
Oh, yes.
Lillian Robbins says, thanks, I didn't realize I'll come back in an hour. And Terry Miles says, the wife and I are having a bet as to how far in the podcast we get before Kirby moans about the clocks changing. I didn't moan at all.
I'm literally still trying to change a clock in this bedroom.
You've got to be careful how you say that, you know.
Well, we get to do it next week. Oh, and also, Lillian posted a screenshot of the Fez and Mop. And she says, watching Silver Nemesis, is that a Fez and a Mop? Whoa, meta. And Robert Wentz Jr. says, hope Adam Pearson wears his Madness one. I have one at home. And I said, we've been talking about that little detail a long time, and I post a link to 7 years ago discussing it.
Right.
Yes, I think I'm done.
Hey, right then. So, Mary, you have Linda and Terry Miles feedback.
Yes, I do. And their feedback goes like this. Hi, everybody. This being the Silver Anniversary story, there are a few people returning. Fiona Walker appears as Lady Pingfort 24 years after playing Kala in The Keys of Marinus.
Yes.
A chap called Nick Courtney, Fiona Cumming, the writer Graham Curry, and a few others. Well, the Cybermen had to be in it as they are Silver. At least they don't have flares like the latest ones. These are real Cybermen. As for the Fourth Reich, the coordinations 74 west, 32 north, put them in the Atlantic, a couple of hundred miles offshore. Windsor is 0.6 west, 51 north. There is always someone who wants to rule the world, and they will never come off a winner when the Cybermen are involved. It's very timey-wimey with Lady Pingfort also being inside the Nemesis. Again, the Doctor destroys the invading fleet. How many is that now? No, that wasn't a challenge, Kirby. Ace is starting to see the dark side of the Doctor. All in all, a good story. No spoons this week, but wait till the next story. Linda and Terry.
There was in the pictures.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Right together.
We have this.
Simon, what was the Southampton score?
Hey.
Southampton beat Everton 2-0.
That was last time. That was last week.
In the UK, we put the clocks back an hour last night.
Yes, we did.
We had put them forward in March, and look what happened then. Silver Nemesis by Kevin Clark. The Doctor and Ace get to wear a fez. They mention several times that the comet returns every 25 years. This is the 25th anniversary of Doctor Who. The Nazis hated jazz music. Lady Paintfort uses magic to time travel with Richard Branson. The Flores and his Nazis are out-Nazied by the Cybermen. John Nathan Turner wanted Prince Edward to be in this. Perhaps he was offered the De Flores role. Was this the first draft of the script? The cast do well with an unwieldy script. Why didn't the gold dust thrown by De Flores kill the cyber leader? I should have played this a few episodes ago. I'm going to tuck my shirt in. Bye for now.
While I'm in advice-giving mode, can I encourage Ian in future to put a beat or two between his jokes? Because we're all laughing right through the beginning of the next thing that you start to say, Ian. So give us a little laugh space. Okay? Yeah,
yes, Ian, put a beat in between your jokes.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest that the other Ian might want to mute if he's going to start choking.
That wasn't Ian. That was Robert.
That wasn't me. That was me. I did cough at the beginning, and then I muted. But then Robert was.
Oh, that was Robert.
Yes, Robert. If you're can you choke to death a little bit quieter, please?
Yeah, come on.
Really.
I can feel the nervous tension building up in the Melrose house.
The challenge begins.
She has a pile of words to dictate.
She's sweating now. I had to do it last week.
Well, if you keep that bit to yourself, that'd be nice. Thank you, Ian. It's a family show.
Oh, sorry.
Melrose music. It's a cool mess. Or anarcho-syndicalists don't do deals with neo-Nazis. Dear 20 megabyters, Silver Nemesis is, of course, a closely studied foretelling of modern electronic security. By creating a three-part scheme for accessing the power of the Validium, the Doctor secures it from cyber attack and other traditional hacking systems. Clearly, the bow is the login, the arrow the password, and the remainder of the statue is the one-time passcode which is left cycling until needed. The Doctor, when ready, sets up a trap drawing in the hackers and other cyber attackers, turning the tables on them. It should be noted that while some characters say in this story that they're in Windsor, they're in fact in Arundel all the time, about 4 miles from where I live. Liz, too, must have been visiting the Second Doctor, who once pretended to be the Duke of Norfolk, whose traditional seat Arundel Castle is, or was that in the 1540s rather than the 1980s.
May I interrupt? Mm-hmm. I just think, just a bit of advice to Alan, don't mention about filming locations when Kirby's in earshot, otherwise he'll be starting to ask if he's been there or anything.
Yeah, we don't care if you've lived near it, just don't bring it up, please.
Resume.
But for the sake of our sanity. Yeah.
We also learn that Agrippina, who posed as the War Doctor's mother whilst he pretended to be Caligula, and whilst the War Master pretended to be her brother-in-law Claudius, did survive her banishment by the Alzarian decider Logan, who was pretending to be the Emperor Tiberius. She escaped to 17th century England and went under the name of Painforte. All in all, Silver Nemesis is a pretty weak celebration of 25 years of Doctor Who. It has some interesting ideas, but none of them are realised to their potential. The disparate parts of the plot are brought together in a peremptory manner, which therefore leaves the viewer unsatisfied. Yeah. Much of the time, it feels like we have joined the story halfway through, and matters mostly get explained in a totally superficial way. The antiquity of the Validium in particular fails to impress with what is simply a very adenine reference to Rassilon and Omega and some other chap.
Omega.
Omega.
I can never say it right. It's become funny. Omega.
You say it the American way.
Hang on. Let's settle this argument once for all. Matthew, what is it?
Omega?
What is it? Is it Omega or Omega?
Omega.
There.
Omega is the American pronunciation.
To be fair, I've picked up British pronunciations of anything and everything, including Zed, from watching British TV. Yeah,
that's correct, then. It's not just British pronunciations, like, that is TV the correct pronunciation.
Like, yes.
Yeah. And nowadays, thanks, I'm saying that. Things like bollocks all the time.
Yeah, will you stop? Stop it, Kirby.
That's
carry on, Debbie.
Sorry, Adam, I said it twice before today.
No, but it makes good input to the podcast, so we can take the mickey out of you. It's fantastic. Thank you very much for that. You get one of these.
Woohoo! As for the Cybermen turning up, even David Banks' Cyber Leader sounds pretty unconvinced as to how they found out about all this. The supporting cast is pretty stellar, with a special mention due for Gerard Murphy. I love him. A successful but much overlooked actor whose voice graces the 1981 BBC Radio 4 adaptation Lord of the Rings as the narrator. Yeah, fantastic. Unfortunately, nobody gets much out of their characters, which are as flat as the plot. If Kirby hasn't told you that Leslie French, who plays the old mathematician that gets killed early on, was considered for the part of the Doctor in 1963, he should hand back his fee for today's recording.
Yes.
This story is perhaps too short, as if we had seen more of the setup and been told how on earth the Cybermen became involved in the situation, it might have distracted slightly from, and even made valid, the complete reuse of the Hand of Omega concept. <under the video>. And we could
couldn't
have.
Could do it, could you?
No, can't. Omega.
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 Oh,
Omega. 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 Like saying, oh my God.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, oh my God. How do I say mega? I say mega, mega. But how do I say omega? Omega.
Omega. Watch the Three Doctors again. Yeah.
No, not
I really
again.
Don't think she
Debbie,
will do.
Not Debbie.
And we could have avoided cool. The next story having to be made at all. Next up, Doctor Who in the tent in a car park, or Rapping Ragnarok, non sequiturs. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
By the way, Debbie. Debbie, you're completely banned from saying Omega the correct way. You must say it the way you say it. Otherwise, we'll never have anything to laugh about again on the show for the rest of the
Omega.
Yeah.
The Cool Whip bit from Family Guy.
That's it, exactly. Yes. Cool.
Say cool whip.
Splendid.
That's what I felt every time I try and say it's mega. I say oh, mega, mega. Say omega.
It's great. Anyway, were you just about to say something, Robert?
I was going to say I'm sad because we're finishing off the last of the David Banks.
Yeah.
So we're going to have none of Ian's. David Banks anymore.
Well, Ian can do some impressions or David Banks.
Anytime somebody needs excellent said, I mean, I'm right there.
No, can you do delete in a David Banks voice?
And when we get around to the 10th Doctor Cyberman stories, he can still say it.
Well, they say delete in a very similar way, don't they?
Delete.
Anyway. All right, then. What are they saying on the live feed? We got Andy Nunny and Laurie Nix having a private conversation in front of us all. She said something about I'll never tell. And then Terry Miles says, wow, an hour and a half. We both lost. Robert Bench Jr., Kirby, check Doctor Who Classic Infinity for feedback. Oh, he's done that. Lenny and Robin, closely studied. Yay! And then Robert Bench Jr. says, sorry, got back to you late eating late lunch.
I tried looking for that stuff on Doctor Who Classic Infinity. Couldn't find it, Doctor Who Classic Infinity. I found a group called Doctor Who Classic where 9 weeks ago they discussed it.
Okay.
Wow.
We're not going to go down that road.
Dave Briscoe says, one of my guilty pleasures. William Cox says, guilty pleasure for me. Jamie Mullen says, shiny Cyberman. And Raymond Majerski says, meh.
Okay. Right then. So where we got up to? Right then.
Kirby, that was a little too excited on that delivery there, Kirby. It's more of a meh.
Okay. Yeah, I think the reason you couldn't see the Doctor Who Classic Infinity, if you're not a member of the group, you can't see what's in the group.
There you go. Oh, what's going on?
So,
what's it done that for? I didn't ask it to do that.
Is it possible that you have to be invited to even know that it exists?
Possibly. If it's a private group, it may be.
Yes. Anyway, okay. Moving on from that.
Well, perhaps he could invite me.
Maybe your reputation precedes you, Kirby. Right, and then can we move on?
They're hiding in the corner. Don't turn the lights on.
Right, then. Oh, yes. So we're going to move on to Doctor Who news. I think we've got through the feedback section. So we're going to have a look. I'll tell you what. We've got.
I found the Doctor Who Classic Infinity.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. I need to. I requested to join this group.
Yeah.
I need to answer some questions. Okay, I will do that.
Oh, God. Well, not today, anyway. DoctorWhoNews.net. There we go. Right. Okay, right. So this site can't be reached. No, we're on the screen now. Before we move on to Doctor Who News, I must mention that a FantasyCon update. Now, I did post, this is going to, almost like a bit of a request, really, for listeners to the show, anybody who might happen to be watching or listening to this show. This is a fact. If nobody enters the cosplay competition I've posted on the FantasyCon page or around social media, if nobody enters that, FantasyCon will not happen. Simple. It's a thing that Deb has said to me, that if there's no entries by the 31st of October... These following guests will not have anything to do on the 30th of October next year. So that's Clive Mantle, Richard Oldfield, Kai Owen, Carla Mendonca, Michelle Collins, Craig Fairbrass, Chris Beard, Nick Joseph and Valile Shabalala. They'll have nothing to do that day because there won't be a FantasyCon. So I've said it now. Let's see if anybody sends their videos of themselves in cosplay.
Has nobody done it at all yet?
Hey?
Has nobody entered?
No. That's really? What she's saying. She's saying that clearly is an indication that nobody wants there to be a convention on the Isle of Wight next year. So, and I have to agree with her.
Can you not, like, ask the paper or to run something?
No. It's an online competition, hence virtual. So, therefore, it's a virtual thing. It's not a difficult thing. Get dressed up, video yourself, send the video in. You're in the competition. So, you don't have to be on the Isle of Wight or in Great Britain. It's just a bit of fun.
I couldn't do that because enter the competition. I haven't got a costume.
Because there won't be a FantasyCon without it. So it all relies on you. I've said it now. So that's the FantasyCon news. Or did you notice how I quietly mentioned a couple of guests there? Chris Beard. I met him on, well, a couple of days ago. He's the body double for Woody Harrelson in Venom 2 and a couple of other films. He does look a bit like Woody, to be fair. And he was name dropping like no one's business when I was having a chat with him, such as Tom Hardy and Morgan Freeman, which I think I quite enjoyed his name dropping, to be fair. Nick Joseph has confirmed he's looking forward to next year. And Valile, of course, has already said she's coming. She sent me a picture of herself, and I didn't actually get a ding from WhatsApp, so I got the picture 2 months too late, basically, so I've already done it. So I sent her a message back saying, is this okay, Valile? Anyway, so that's that's FantasyCon news. Doctor Who news. Adventures in Lockdown. Is this new? 19th of October. Where are we now? Oh, it's only just new, isn't it?
Yeah,
Penguin
it is new.
Random House has announced that the release of Doctor Who Adventures in Lockdown, a collection of stories written by Doctor Who writers in response to COVID-19. There's 16 stories, yeah. I'm not going to read them out, but I've noticed that Neil Gaiman is among the... Oh, I'm Stephen Moffat, Russell T. Davis, Chris Chibnall... never mind, can't have it all, can we? Joy Wilkinson, Renee Patel, Mark Gatiss, Paul Cornell's written three. Pete McTeague...
Ty
McTy, whatever. So, yeah, that might be worth getting, really. It's
Master?
Oh, jeez, I nearly got the end of the piece, didn't I?
They missed something. They could have put this out instead of as Penguin Random House, could have gone out as Frobisher Random House.
In aid of children in need. This
book. But someone got that.
Yeah, that you can only UK retailers only.
I'm sure if anybody buys it, they can send it out via eBay.
Oh, okay.
What about in Australia?
That I don't know because I'm not in Australia.
I'm sure they'll be able to get it out somehow. Also, Michelle Ryan is returning as Lady Christina on Big Finish.
In a series nobody wanted whatsoever.
That's not very
but
nice,
clearly
Robert.
Enough people have bought because they're doing a second box set, Robert.
Mm. Yeah, a bit of an argument going on there. That's got to be one of these.
Come on.
I miss being sat next to you.
Anyway, all right, that'll do with the drums. Thank you.
Matthew, I'd already found the group and had requested before you sent me the link, but thank you.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about Matthew, actually. You know, we were talking, obviously, this week about Silver Nemesis, and last week we reviewed The Happiness Patrol. Didn't get the best of reviews. What's your opinions of Happiness Patrol, Matthew?
I have to admit, I quite like it as a
story. Yay!
I'm often amused by the fact that for a story that's all about looking beneath the surface of things, when people talk about Happiness Patrol, they almost invariably focus on how cheap it looks and, you know, and on the Candyman. And there's a lot of, for me anyways, having seen the story several times since 07 and having reviewed it, I think there's a lot of interesting kind of thematic stuff going on in there. But, to an extent, it is kind of the Doctor kind of going in and overthrowing an alien government in a night, which, to be fair, we've seen quite a bit of in Classic Who even by that point. But, as I said, the thematic stuff in there is what I'm interested in. And there's a lot of sort of political commentary going on about totalitarian regimes in the world at that point. You know, things like people disappearing and whatnot, which is what was going on, particularly in South America at the time. And which I think is Graham Curry, I think, who wrote the script for that one, commented on the DVD release that it was something he was deliberately talking about in putting that in there. And so it's not a great story by any means. I will agree that some of the criticism of particularly the production values is well deserved. But I think on the whole, it's a story that gets a lot of stick because people aren't, you know, people are looking for things to throw at it rather than actually go, well, what's here that we can actually enjoy? Because I think there's a coherent story there. I just wish that the Candyman wasn't quite so laughable.
Okay. Well, thank you, Matthew.
So, Matthew, do you think you can join us next week?
I'm hoping to, since I'm starting to feel better. For those who don't follow me on Facebook, I've basically spent the last 2 weeks quarantined as a result of a suspected COVID case. The test, thankfully, for the family member who might have had it came back negative, but we both had something. I don't know what in the world we had, but we definitely had COVID symptoms. Mm. So that was why I actually missed last week, because I actually sat down and watched Happiness Patrol with the intention of coming on, only to spend most of last Sunday in bed. So apologies for that, everyone. So I'm hoping I'll be on more regularly, at least through the end of the McCoy era.
Splendid.
Yeah, we need you to come in so we have a trio of extreme pedants.
Yeah. All right then. Who won Doctor Who? No. Who won.co.uk?
He's also a pedant.
Yeah, all right.
And next week we get on at 2 o'clock or earlier.
Yeah. Something like that. Yes. Who won .co.uk? Doctor Who Magazine 556 is out, as is the special.
Who won .co.uk?
Yeah, 55 production design. Keeper of Traken, audio book, and Time Lord Victorious, The Night, The Fool, and The Dead, etc., etc. Lots of these items available to purchase as hard copies from Who Won. If that remember the old day of hard copies, well, you can get your hard copies from whowon.co.uk.
I like getting hard copies, is the actual.
That's what she said. And, of course, a pre-order of 8th Doctor Time War 4, Daleks Destroy, Flying Dutchman and Displaced, I Am the Master, all these other little gems that you can get in as some hard copies from whowon.co.uk. Still our sponsors after over 10 years. Lavazzi, and I'll point out that it is now less than 2 months to go to Christmas.
Hooray. So,
and it will be quite cold if you live in the Great Britain. Pretty pointless if you're in Australia, to be fair. But you can get a lovely, warm, cuddly scarf that is a Doctor Who icon from Lavazzi. I don't think that they'll ever not sell them, because they're not ever going to be not wanted, are they? Let's face it. So, yes, 4th Doctor scarves are on offer at the moment. A little bit, about £2 or £1 off each one. It's like, yes, little snippets of money off these scarves as we speak. Not a lot, but little. Also, there's a fantastic Doctor Who blog and a sort of fan fiction blog as well. So you can enter your fan fiction to Lavazzi. They absolutely love Doctor Who at Lavazzi. And there's also other sci-fi blogs. They're talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 3 and also other bits and bobs. So subscribe and join the Lavazzi website. It's absolutely fantastic. I said absolutely there. Now, if I was doing a TikTok, I'd redo that. But as this is a live podcast, I can't redo it, can I? I've got a ding come up on my phone.
So right. Absolutely is like fabulous and absolutely, just rolled into one.
Absolutely. Yes, well, I've invented a word accidentally. So that's that one. Oh, yeah, Heroes. I know a new load of Funko Pops came out recently. I'm very surprised there's not a long line of Funko Pops coming out for Crimbo, to be fair, especially in... the things that are coming out soon. You are.
Wonder how many have been released altogether. There must be thousands.
And the vaulted ones are the ones that are valuable, or the ones you get from specific conventions. But there's Avengers Endgame supersized Thanos, which looks really cool at £39.99.
It does look good, doesn't it?
I wouldn't mind having that in my room. I wouldn't be allowed to have it, obviously, because I've got too many Funko Pops, I've been told. And she was saying, what do you want for Christmas?
How many have you got?
Too many. I haven't counted them.
How many is too many?
I've got about 25, 30.
No, sorry, I've got more than that.
I've got about six.
I've got three. I'm trying to collect the supernatural ones at the moment.
I did say to Deb, she said, what do you want for Christmas? Because my mum doesn't want to buy you any Funko Pops, so that's fine.
Funko Pops, please.
No, I want a large rug for this room because
you can have a special shelf in our shed for them.
But having seen that Thanos one, I'm very, I'd like to have that great big Thanos one. That's really cool. So maybe if I get some spare Christmas money, which is highly unlikely, I might invest in that. There's also the Beetlejuice Barbara transformed and a few other bits and bobs.
I've already got your Christmas present.
Ooh.
I've got a cool little story about. Avengers stuff. A friend of mine, he sold me, he was moving back to Utah, and he sold me his Thanos glove.
Ooh,
the one that you put on and it makes all the sounds and everything. He says, but it's broken. Oh. It doesn't really make the sounds and stuff anymore. I'm like, it'll still look cool on my mantelpiece. I mean,
yes.
And I might take a look at it, see if it's something I can fix.
Well, I've got my Thor hammer.
Batteries out, put the batteries in it, and it worked. Take the batteries.
I said,
do you want it back? And he goes, no, a deal's a deal. I'm like, cool. But the problem with it is, my wife took a liking to it. She took it to work, and it hasn't come back. But it's great. It's got these rings in it, and you slip it on, and you go, you can pull the things in. And say, wow. It's like, yeah. So yeah, and you can press the stones, and it's really cool. So I told her that she has to buy me the Iron Gauntlet as a payback, because I really want the Iron Gauntlet.
Right then. Thank you, Ian. I was just going to point out about this cosplay competition, FancyCon. I forgot to mention, if you want to enter it, and just do it for fun, there are prizes available. Heroes are doing a goodie bag. If you live on the Isle of Wight and you happen to enter it, I'll do a free cosplay portrait photo shoot. And you
Adam,
get a ticket to FancyCon.
Will it count if Isla enters it, or does it not count because I'm part of it?
Anybody can enter it. If you enter it, you especially if you're the only person to enter it, there's a goodie bag from Heroes.
Yeah.
So just enter the competition. It's not going to hurt
anybody. And the
thing
is, if nobody else enters, who's really going to complain that you won?
Win by default, why not?
That's not fair. She won. She's nobody else entered.
Furthermore, to enter, what you need to do is do a video of no longer than 30 seconds and send it in to dozeromb.feedback@gmail.com. Or inbox the FantasyCon page on Facebook. Don't post it on the Facebook page. Inbox it, and then we will eventually post them, but not I say them. Probably going to be it if anything. You know.
Yeah, sounds but, like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do
coming.
My best.
Just need
There'll
to
be
get
one
videos
from me,
in.
One from Tom, and one from Isla.
Well, that'll be good.
Baby's going to cosplay as Leela.
Maybe I'll throw my coat on and
just do it.
And
just show up.
I could do my ood, I suppose.
I beg your pardon?
I usually do my clockwork droid. That just seems to be it, really.
Have you told the ood about this? I mean, is it a bit... strange thing to announce on a family show.
Master.
Uh-oh.
The search box on Podbean does not work.
No, it doesn't, does it? It's rubbish.
So
don't know
you
why.
Might want to let them know.
Yeah, I'll let you do that bit. Where have we got up to?
No, you're the one paying for it.
Yeah, I know I am. What we've got coming through. Robert Vince Jr. says, Kirby Bartlett Stone, how could they question your Doctor Who? I thought you have joined every Doctor Who. Oh, everything Doctor Who. Oh, God, I really can't read properly, can I? Then he says, I know like watching Star Trek Discovery. Watched the first two episodes of Series 3. And then he says, I've been to Arundel Castle several times. Alan T. Butcher.
He's been approved.
Oh, jeez. Alan T. Butcher says, I've been to Arundel Castle several times. I've been to Arundel High Street hundreds of times. Never been to the Folly Tower that serves as Lady P's tomb. Yes, Kirby.
This is feedback on Doctor Who Classic Infinity.
Oh, yes.
Scott Wilson says, I've learned to enjoy this story on its own terms and also due to diminished expectations. Was really disappointed back in the 80s on first viewing. John Michael Fink says, love it. This is a repeat of Robert Wince Jr.'s picture of the cake. Kieran Sam Council says, I have been subjected to Doctor Who from a young age. I say subjected because as a really young kid, I hated it. Dad would always put on Pertwee, and as a young kid, Lego was more interesting. However, I found Dad's 45 Years of Who book a few years later and saw pictures of the Cybermen and thought they were absolutely amazing. One morning, I got up at 4 a.m. and thought, bugger it. I'll watch TV until everyone else wakes up. I came across Doctor Who on UK TV Gold. It was Trial of a Time Lord. I got up every morning after that at 5 a.m. to watch Doctor Who, and when Silver Nemesis came on, that was it for me. The Cybermen were everything I expected from them, seeing them only in pictures before, and that's how I got hooked on Who. Silver Nemesis was one of the stories that got me hooked, along with Paradise Towers and Trial of a Time Lord.
I'm sorry you took the mickey out of it.
Robert Jr. says, I think it's the wrong story for the 25th anniversary. The story goes all over the place. Only in Doctor Who do you have a guest appearance by an actor in a car just to say, do you need a ride? Also, Time Travel by Blood Sacrifice. Remembrance of the Daleks should be the 25th anniversary one.
Yes.
A lot of look at that one as being the anniversary one. Yeah. By the way, if he had just repeated what he had said over on our page, I would not have read that, but I could tell this was different. Gordon G. Thomas says, yeah, next week in big parts of North America get to have an extra hour to watch television. They're just talking about time change.
I think we also need to celebrate the fact that we as a podcast have just completed 25 years of Doctor Who viewing.
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
One more Silver Nemesis comment.
Oh, sorry.
Casper Dowland says, got home from weekend and saw this post. Need to remind you all that there was at the time a special feature of the filming of the event. Pretty cool, very 1980s with location scenery, interviews, and very bad 80s hair, clothes, and accessories. Mm. I sat down and watched the Silver Nemesis, good times. Okay. That's it.
Oh, was that it?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm going to have to, with Robert Wentz sending my request for feedback to other groups, this means we're going to end up with lots more feedback.
We'll help you read it.
It's good, but he needs to let them know why they're feeding back and the fact that they're feeding back for this show. Otherwise, they may think, oh, I don't want to feed back the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. It's a lot of rubbish. Anyway.
No, we're not. We're fabulous.
Can you mention something about the name change of the group?
Oh, it's always been that. I just forgot to add it on. It's always been
because it's got which you can join at the end of it.
Well, that's what we always say, don't we, on the show. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group which you can join. But I always meant to add it on.
Oh, this is funny.
It's an in-joke.
One of my former co-workers posted on our group. His name's Chris Hayden. What was the episode with reptiles living under the surface of a planet, Earth?
Silurians.
And Mary answers Doctor of the Silurians, Third Doctor. But Chris Miller posts a picture of the Slea Stack from Land of the Lost.
Right then, I just wanted to talk about, because another thing, obviously not an awful lot of new stuff to watch at the moment, but Star Trek Discovery has excelled itself. Normally the situation with programs like this, that they sort of reach a sort of point and they go rubbish. Now Star Trek Discovery was on this little road which sort of reached a crescendo at the end of series two, and you think, well, how are they gonna, you know, continue it? But it's just brilliant. In fact, for me, it's better. It's more of an ensemble family sort of thing. Slightly more grown up as old Star Trek is. But
what's this?
Star Trek Discovery.
Episode
one and two of series three.
Did you watch
fantastic.
The two episodes?
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And I've fallen even more in love with Michael Burnham as a character, because she was really grumpy in the first two series, but she's become
really
human.
She's
become human. She's fantastic. She's a great actress anyway. Very watchable. And, of course, you've got Georgiou, who has been a very, very interesting character throughout the whole history, and she's even more interesting. It's just an absolutely brilliant series. I'm absolutely, completely and utterly smitten by Star Trek Discovery.
Captain on deck.
Superb. this means I've got a text. Ooh. Not very
Mine's
interesting.
Still Final Fantasy.
Badminton
you've won
text.
The fight notification.
Kirby would like mine.
I bet he would, but what about, we're talking about text messages at the moment. Anyway, right, so there's a new series of Crown coming up in 2 weeks' time on Netflix, and look forward to that.
Oh, yes, nice. I like that.
And Robert Vance Jr. says, Discovery looking good so far. Indeed it is. And I do like the fact they're releasing episodes week by week, because, you know, people like, when they're, to do the whole series, you've got other people at different stages, and people then start talking about the stages you haven't got to, because I know they released Stranger Things and Umbrella Academy in a lump sum, so, and not all of us can spend a whole day watching a new series of a brilliant piece of, well, Umbrella Academy is just ridiculously good. But yeah, that's it, that's all I wanted to say.
I like that with The Boys when they're releasing that, you know, every Friday. It was kind of like, cool, I'd get myself a drink and come in, because my wife doesn't really like it because it's gory and kind of gross.
I miss
it. You know, it'd be like my kind of unwind thing, and it's like, and I, you know, I wouldn't blow through it all in one evening. I could, you know, it was that kind of release every Friday of like, all right.
I
know,
love that. I was
squeeze people's heads.
I don't care for it.
Watching The Mandalorian one, each episode every week was great too.
Yeah,
that's been well received. I haven't watched it myself, but it's been very well received.
It's that having an appointment with a release and an enjoyment is actually good for you to have. So I'm glad that we're getting both. We're getting, you know,
it's like we have to wait for Bake Off every Tuesday. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like to watch Bake Off.
Not as enough episodes this year.
One of these days I'll watch Star Trek Discovery, but I finally got season one, so maybe I'll
watch.
I didn't think you were a Star Trek fan anyway.
don't start him on that one.
Have you ever watched Star Trek?
Right, before we go, I just wanted
to dig out the pictures of me.
Before I go, I just wanted to give a shout out to, if you've got Netflix, because Halloween's coming up. Hubie Halloween is an Adam Sandler film, which is great fun, good family fun Halloween film, and it's quite funny as well. So yeah, I'd highly recommend that for the family. Really good stuff. And I think
Halloween.
I also like the fact that Adam Sandler has his whole family in the film as well, which is fantastic, which he tends to do. But it also features a guest appearance from Ben Stiller. So there you go. That's it then. Unless anybody's got anything else to say, pauses for comment.
Legends of Tomorrow. If anybody's, I don't know if anybody, I mean, I kind of got all into the CW shows at one point, but then I kind of dropped off them, but I dove back into Legends Tomorrow, and I gotta say, it's like, it's actually really funny. They don't, I don't know,
back?
I'm just catching up on Netflix,
I've seen all the series.
They are back filming. They are back filming, because Katie just posted that they were coming back. So,
well, Isabella's heard that they're filming Umbrella Academy and Stranger Things at the moment, so that's good news for her.
Yes, they are. Yep.
We are running quite a bit over time.
Yes, but it's been fun, Mary. Shut your face. Right then. Robert Vence Jr. says, so Kirby, when will you watch it? Oh.
Wait,
I've never heard him go quiet after being asked the question.
I didn't understand what you said.
Robert Vence Jr. says, when will you watch it? As in Star Trek Discovery.
Eventually.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, sure. I'm currently going through the original series with Fred.
Haven't you seen that before?
Yes.
Probably best to watch perhaps new Star Trek if possible, but
yeah.
Hey-ho.
Well, she's really enjoying it, but okay. She's been busy doing other things for the last week or so, so we haven't watched for about a week. Right. We just started watching season two of the original series about a month ago.
Robert, can I just give, this is Robert Vence Jr., give some advice. Don't ask Kirby questions like that because we're trying to end the show and we've just lengthened it by about 15 minutes just on that one question. And he then says, because I think he's just given us a little bit of a hint, it's time to end the show. He says, great show today. Thanks, everyone. Until next week. Bye. Which is essentially what I'm going to be saying in a minute. And then Laurie Nick says, have a wonderful holiday next Saturday. Hugs to all. And Mary.
I think everybody's telling us to shut up and go home.
Yes.
Well, I want to watch. I want to have a bath and watch Murder on CCTV.
Talking about Doctor Who, so we're not listening anymore.
Yeah, I think we're getting the offstage hook here.
Yes.
Yeah, we are kind of.
Mary, I love you, and I'm going to say goodbye. So anyway, so next week we'll be looking at the greatest show in the galaxy. It's not quite the greatest show in the galaxy, sadly, but there you go. Have to live with Darth titles.
The galaxy.
This is one of the ones that I definitely did with you when I sort of first started, so it'd be good to revisit.
And you're saying that in public? Anyway, right, so this one before, greatest show in the galaxy next week.
Have I done this one before?
Let me look. Hang on.
Oh, God.
How many euphemisms are we going to fit into this last section of the show?
That's what she said.
Show in the galaxy, no.
Right, okay, good.
We last talked about this one on May the 12th, 2014.
That's my birthday, hey.
With Adam, me, Mary, and Debbie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was still in my 40s then. I think I'm probably in my 60s before I actually get to the end of this show.
My 30s.
And you were in your 50s when this show started.
Anyway, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Please keep the feedback coming in. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
So long. Thanks for all the fish.
See ya.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.